We reported earlier this month on the horrendous beating of a white 18-year-old with schizophrenia by four blacks. The Chicago judge refused to grant bail to the four who forced the 18-year-old to drink toilet water and taped his mouth shut. At the time, it was seen by many as a hate crime inspired by the Black Lives Matter movement. We spoke to a leader in the movement who rejected that. And the fact is, black-on-white crimes are rare. FBI statistics show out of almost 6,000 hate crimes in 2015, a fraction, 613, were black-on-white. Several officials in Chicago said they didn't think the kidnapping was connected to any group. And after the incident, disability advocates pointed out another statistic. Disabled students are twice as likely to be victims of bullying. The disability advocacy group PACER has a National Bullying Prevention Center. Director Julie Herzog joins us from the studios of NPR in Minneapolis. And Julie, the attackers have not been tried yet. We don't know their motives. But what did you see in that terrible video?
You know, I guess that's probably going to come from the framework that you're looking at it as. And I immediately thought about the disability piece because of the vulnerability of this young man and how easy it can be to manipulate somebody who's vulnerable. And oftentimes people with disabilities are so isolated, and having a peer group is of the ultimate importance to them. And so, you know, it's easy to say, hey, I'm going to be your friend and coerce them into doing things that they wouldn't typically do.
I gave the stat, you know, young people with disabilities twice as likely to be attacked. But people like Rebecca Coakley, the executive director of the National Council on Disability, says she thinks the number's far higher because people with disabilities don't often report. Do you agree?
Yes, absolutely. There's a potential for it being much higher. And there's a statistic out there, an analysis done for students with disabilities in school, that they're bullied 2 to 3 times more than their non-disabled peers.
Well, we should say that you come to your position with some experience in having a disabled child.
Yeah. My husband and I are parents to David, who is now a 20-year-old young man who was born with Down syndrome and some other really significant medical issues. When David was going into kindergarten, I was looking at him and thinking, here's somebody who's so incredibly vulnerable at the age of 5 to being mistreated by his peers. And he had survived, literally had survived heart surgeries and being on a trach and having a feeding tube and fought so hard to live that I thought if he goes to school and he's hurt or harmed, it'll just absolutely break my heart.
Was he bullied?
No. In fact, he had a very successful school experience, but that was because of the number of steps that we put in place to, you know, ensure that he was valued and respected and included.
Well, we want to hear more about what they were. But meantime, we have the statistic that other kids are getting bullied. In Newark, Delaware, several teens filmed themselves beating up a 26-year-old who had a neurodevelopmental disorder. The perpetrators, 13 and 14 years old. In March of last year, two teens in the UK given 15-year jail sentences. They beat up a 16-year-old deaf boy who had autism, along with his 18-year-old friend with autism. Those might seem, you know, extreme, but what are the stories that you hear?
We do hear stories every day about how kids are being bullied. In fact, our organization got involved with the topic of bullying because of one absolutely horrific story that we heard. It came from a letter from a parent in a local suburban school district who had a son with developmental delays. And every day there was a group of boys, of young men, who was taking his head and they were slamming it into a locker. And then it kept escalating. So at one point they actually gave this young man laxatives and then they forced him to wear a diaper. And the school, the administration at that time, this was in the early 2000, wasn't doing anything. Number one, we immediately went to that school and we talked about the laws that protect kids with disabilities. But we said we need to change the culture around how we look at the topic of bullying and also how we view individuals with disabilities, because so often they're viewed as being different or viewed as less than.
What is the law?
There actually is a federal law that if a student with a disability is being bullied because of their disability, then that's considered harassment, and there's protections through the Department of Justice for that. They have the right to be safe at school because so often kids with disabilities don't tell anybody when they're being bullied.
We'll talk more about that and the steps that maybe you took. I can imagine you could maybe have school assemblies to introduce kids to the idea of someone who's different from you, and you can get word out about this is a federal law, not just bad behavior. But what else can you do?
As a society, as a culture, we want to, number one, really start looking at how can we change some of the stereotypes that we have about disability. When 1 out of 5 individuals have a disability, that's pretty high in the population. And so one of the things that we can really look at is even how do we think about the language that we use? And so often when I go into even a middle school or a high school, I'll hear disparaging terms, and the most common one is, and Robin, I even hate to say it out loud, but it's the use of the word retard. Mm. It's a derogatory term meant to indicate that somebody's less than. If we keep saying it, keeps perpetuating the stereotype. One of the things that we've always looked at with my son David, too, is this concept of what can we do to encourage those around him to be, and as young kids we call them bystanders, to be effective bystanders and to be advocates for him. And again, it's not only the kids with disabilities who are being horribly impacted, but it's the other kids who are witnessing and seeing these things, and they don't like it, and they don't know what to do. We absolutely want to empower people to be able to have that comfort to speak up.
What's some of the other information that you give people? We understand there's a template letter that people can use if their kid's being bullied so that they have a template already laid out that they can just fill in.
Yeah, it's a great way to report a bullying situation because it's a letter that parents can fill out and provide to schools. And what's nice about the template letter is that so often we know with bullying, it's just emotionally laden. You as a parent are feeling maybe sad or angry or scared. And the letter gives you a chance to be factual, to share that information with the school in a way that is going to really be productive so that there can be a conversation. And then be proactive and take steps about what you can do to make sure that it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, letting people know that there were letters from the Office for Civil Rights to schools that clearly outline a school has a responsibility here.
Yeah, and I think also parents and educators should know that every one of our states right now, too, also has a bullying prevention law. And there's a lot of variance within those laws, but the important piece of that is that our kids do, through those laws, have the right to be safe at school.
You've got online resources to show these families and kids that they're not alone.
So important. And in talking with students from across the country, the common theme that we hear from kids who are bullied is they'll tell us, I feel so alone. And I think that's such an important piece. And what that says to me is that we need to, when our kids tell us that they're being bullied, especially with our kids with disabilities who may have a hard time articulating that what's happening to them, we need to be listening and cueing in when they say that something is bothering them or hurting them. The thing that we hear the most from students who see bullying is they say, I want to do something. I don't like the bullying, but I don't know what to do. What can schools do? One of the most important things that they can do is just to let kids know that if they see bullying, number one, don't participate in it because bullying wants an audience. The other thing that you can do is try to get the student who's being bullied away from the situation. The third thing you can do is tell an adult. Make sure that somebody knows what's happening. And especially, I'll go back to my own son, David. He's nonverbal. If he's being bullied, he doesn't have any way to tell somebody about it. So we really depended on other kids because so often bullying happens outside the purview of adults.
Hmm. Well, you have all these online resources, but you also talk about when a child can communicate. Self-advocacy, there's sort of steps they can take, forms they can fill out. There's the drama, is it happening to you? So that they can have some power over this by what, writing about it?
Yeah, we have another wonderful document called a student action plan, which really helps kids think through strategically how they can respond when they see, you know, an individual such as my own son being hurt or harmed in the hallway to make it stop.
Well, and if it's your son or a child that is capable, there's the self-advocacy tab so that they can get in there and kind of write down steps of action they want to take, you know, empowering. Julie Herzog, director of the advocacy group PACER's National Bullying Prevention Center, speaking to us from Minneapolis. Julie, thank you.
Thank you, Robin.
And back to that Chicago case of the young man tormented by kidnappers. Prosecutors say the suspects demanded money from the mother of the victim, who thought his attackers were going to be his friends.